Very good afternoon to you. The time is 12:07, and you're tuned to Midday Matters Health 360 here on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter, not the normal host of this program. Sarah D'Elia is off this week. I'm thrilled to be filling in for her with our usual co-host here, Dr. Peter Rothman. Dr. Rothman, I'm happy to be here. I've never hosted the program with you.
Well, thank you, Sean, and it's wonderful working with you. What we're going to be talking about today is holiday weight gain. And through the years, there's been a myth circulating through our population that people gain 7 to 10 pounds per year after the holidays, what with the caloric onslaught from Halloween to Thanksgiving to Christmas. But in surveys, people actually reported that they thought that they gained 5 pounds a year. Well, the scientific studies that were first published in 2000 from the National Institute of Health, and again in 2003 and 2007 in the New England Journal of Medicine, show that we really, on the average, gain 1 pound a year. The bad news is that that 1 pound stays and does not go away. And for people who are overweight going into the season, they may gain 5 pounds. And if you multiply those poundages by 30 holiday seasons, you can see that there can be significant weight gain as we age. So this is a very important period of the year for people to be careful with both their dietary habits and their exercise routines. And with us here today, we have Jennifer Harrison, clinical dietitian from the Lutheran Weight Management Program, and Todd Jenkins, athletic trainer and exercise physiologist from the Lutheran Orthopedic Hospital, to help better describe these issues and answer your questions. I'd like to start asking Jennifer, what is it that's so special about this period of the year that dietary indiscretions and the pitfalls that people fall into that lead to this holiday weight gain?
I think that the main thing that we fall into in this year is we get off of our normal schedule. You know, during the year, we can be structured. We go to work, we go home, we go to school, what have you. This time of year, there is a major amount of parties. At work, we celebrate by having carry-ins. We do, you know, things out of the ordinary where we bake goodies, we make cookies. You know, we make these things that we normally wouldn't make, be it with your kids, with your family, something fun to do. It's just very out of the ordinary. Mm-hmm.
And before we go any further, I do want to invite our listeners to join the conversation as well. And maybe if you're the person who left the cheesecake in the break room this afternoon, or if you've been able to resist those temptations, you've been able to keep the weight off, avoid that gain, give us a call and share your tips and share your stories. 260-452-1185. You can always call us toll free, of course, at 1-800-471-9264. Email MiddayMatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters.
And Todd, what happens to people's exercise patterns as they get into the winter season and the holiday season, and what can they or should they be doing during this time of high caloric onslaught?
Well, I would agree with Jennifer that it's especially hard this time of year that you start getting stressed and very busy. You know, that they'll have their normal routines for most of the year. And then come this time of year, you know, there's a lot of breaks in that pattern, you know, that they feel like they've got shopping to do, parties to go to, you know, family to visit, you know, that they're away from their home, away from their gym, away from the routine that permits them to do the exercises, you know, that would be helpful, whether that's at home or at a gym. You know, so I think that's a big part of it. Again, the break in the schedule and the amount of stress that people are going through at this time. They just feel like, I can't sacrifice any more time. I have to make this up somewhere. So one way is to cut out that exercise portion, especially for those that feel it's more of a chore than something that they love to do.
And Jennifer Harrison.
Absolutely, yeah. I feel, you know, also that this is a very busy time. We get tired. You know, you come home, you want to do something other than just take the time to exercise. You're exhausted from your day running around town or at work. You come home, you have all these things you feel like you have to do, get ready for guests or whatever, you know, is going on. And exercise sort of takes, you know, the bottom of the ladder at that point.
But if you're going to the store to shop, park way out in the parking lot and take a nice long walk to the main door.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're stressed, go out and take a walk just from the mind relaxation standpoint, let alone the exercise.
And I wanted to add here too, and Jennifer Harrison, perhaps we can start with you. I mean, it does seem like this is a season of giving, of celebration. Folks want to treat their loved ones,
sure.
Right, or just treat their loved ones.
Absolutely.
When you're presented with that kind of hospitality, often that can be very difficult to resist.
It is, absolutely. Food, is definitely a sign of love from many people. Your grandparents, your parents, you want to give kids, treats, make this time of year special by providing those goodies, those sugar cookies. And it is tough. You don't want to turn people down when you come. Either you're a visitor in their house or they're visiting you. You want to, take what they offer you or offer it to someone else and make them feel welcome and loved. So it's very difficult to turn those things down.
And we do want to hear from our listeners today. A reminder, 260-452-1185 or NIPR.FM, excuse me, our email address is middaymatters@NIPR.FM. Todd Jenkins, I mean, it seems like whatever ails us in terms of, this caloric onslaught, as Dr. Rothman mentioned, it's always about moderation. During this season, it's particularly difficult to be moderate, and it seems like just about anyway sometimes.
Yeah, I think one thing that would be helpful for people would be this, is that even if they can't do their normal exercise routine, even a little can be better than none at all. One way to kind of think about that would be is because it's the amount of calories that we're taking in compared to the amount of calories we're burning off, if you're exercising even a little bit, it's almost like leaving your car sit in the driveway, but it's running. It's still burning gas, even though it's not actually doing much. So even a little bit of exercise can be very helpful. I don't want people to get caught up on the idea that, for every little piece of fudge I have to also do some level of exercise. It's not so much that. I would hate for somebody to develop almost a disorder and be paranoid about eating. But we also want to consider the metabolic after effect of exercise, that you're not just burning calories while you're doing that particular exercise. It's also the repair, the recovery from that exercise. So even when you're home sleeping at night from that exercise you did previously, you're going to be burning more calories than you would have otherwise. So that can be helpful. So even a little bit of exercise this time of year can be very helpful, even if it's not part of their normal routine because of the hectic schedule.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer Harrison.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think exercise and diet related, it's great to avoid that all or nothing attitude where, okay, I had cookies for breakfast, it doesn't matter what I do the rest of the day. No, it actually really does matter. And that's, the same line of the exercise. It's better to do 10 minutes, even though you're used to doing an hour, do that 10 minutes. That's a lot better than nothing.
Yeah.
So.
Well, so much of this season is it contributes to a sedentary lifestyle in the first place. So it does seem like every little bit counts at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. And Jennifer, what are the types of foods that are special to this type of time of year? And what can people do in their food preparation to minimize the extreme amount of calories that they're serving?
This is a very comfort food type, time of year to me. Not only the sweets, the cookies, the cakes, those kind of really calorically dense items, but also more comfort foods along the lines of mashed potatoes, a lot of those gravies, sauces, all of these additions that we may not normally have during the year at our special Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's dinners, meals. And there's definitely ways, swaps, things that we can do. Cut out. We don't need to have 10 different sides. Pick just a couple. Have some good fruits and vegetables on the side. Have your good lean meat. You can still have one or two of those good side items that you really want and your family loves, but don't have all of them. Mm-hmm. Sort of pick and choose what's important to you and your family, and just don't go overboard, basically.
Well, and when the holiday comes, those dinner plates look awfully big, and sometimes awfully empty after everything's gone around the table. It's a lot about portion control.
It absolutely is. That's a great point. There's a lot of studies out that saying using a smaller plate, more like the salad size plate, as opposed to the ginormous dinner plate, we eat 20% or more less than we would if we do the bigger plate.
Looks like we have a caller on the line, and of course, we'd love for you to join the conversation today. If you've been able to avoid the holiday temptations, or if you'd like to confess to us this hour, what did you end this year? We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 260 452-1185 or 1-800-471-9264. We also have our Facebook and Twitter feeds up this hour. You can get in touch with us that way as well. Let's open the phones and go to Daniel. Daniel, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Yes, good afternoon. First, to answer the question, I've avoided at least Christmas so far because our family has pushed the celebration to the 30th, so haven't had that yet. But that's also closer to the main question I have about New Year's resolutions and whether those are helpful, neutral, or maybe even harmful in our efforts to have a healthy response. Maybe after a few months is not the best planning, but a component of our response to maintaining healthy amounts of food that we consume and then the exercise. So that's the question.
A great question, Daniel. And Todd Jenkins, let's start with you. This, of course, the time when many folks will be heading out to the gym for that brand new membership.
Yeah, Daniel, with your first question, whether a resolution is good, bad, or neutral, you know, my personal feelings would be, is it either be neutral? You know, I think it can be a nice way, an excuse, you know, to say, okay, now I'm going to get started. But I think the one downside to it is this notion of a beginning and an end, you know, that I'll begin on this date is if there's an end in sight somewhere down the road. And really with exercise especially, it really does mean for life that we're doing some level of activity. You know, does it mean you have to go to a gym or that you have to be a runner or a bicyclist or whatever it happens to be? No, I mean, we can certainly be flexible with ourselves and that may change over time. But you're a lifer with that. You know, so again, it can be a good excuse to get you started. You know, if you need that reason, that thing that sets you over the top and says, okay, now I'm going to begin to exercise, then it can be useful. Mm-hmm. But then at that point, you really need to think, okay, how am I going to make this a lifestyle? Okay. This is just going to be part of me.
All right. Daniel, we appreciate your call. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Dr. Roth?
I'd like to ask Todd. Todd makes an excellent point that this is a daily lifestyle thing. It's not just for the month or two after Christmas. And try the best you can during the upcoming holiday seasons to keep your daily average everyday exercise schedule if possible. But the type of exercise that you do, there's been some discussion about aerobic exercise versus resistance or weight training type exercise or a combination thereof. What would you recommend to our listeners?
Well, if you're not familiar with the different types, again, with aerobic exercise or cardiovascular exercise, that's going to be one of these types of exercises that get you moving for an extended period of time. Again, the American College of Sports Medicine recommends a minimum of 20 minutes, although some have to work up to that point. It's going to get your heart rate up to a certain level, and there's different ways we can gauge that heart rate. That tells us that metabolically what's happening on the inside is all the right stuff. You know, as your body takes in oxygen, it burns those calories with that oxygen in order to do work. With weight training, on the other hand, that's more of a muscle building. It's a more specific type of exercise. It's still good exercise, but it works in a completely different way. You know, if somebody's asking, boy, what type of exercise is going to give me the most bang for my buck, I would probably say aerobic exercise. Because for those that are deconditioned, that they're not in as very good shape, that aerobic exercise will have a strengthening component to it. But on top of it is the bigger cardiovascular metabolic effect. You know, as their body kind of fine-tunes itself over time, you know, to be able to, again, to take in that oxygen, deliver it to the muscles, that takes work, and then to be able to take glycogen, which is the storage form of sugar, take that out of the muscle cell and then burn that to do energy. The whole chemical process of taking body fat and then using it as an energy source becomes more efficient with time, with practice. It takes that exercise to do that. In the beginning, it's not a very efficient process. You know, to take body fat is a very complex molecule, and to tear it apart into something the muscles can then use for energy, that takes work to be able to do. But with time, with practice, and that's the exercise, that aerobic type of exercise, it gets better and better and better. You know, aerobic types of exercise, that would include things like walking or jogging. It could include like swimming or bicycling. If people like to go to a gym, that would include things like the elliptical machines that are out there, aerobic classes that are out there, whether that be Zumba, step class. Sometimes they'll even do, like I've seen, cardiovascular yoga, you know, which is kind of unusual, but it's stretching with more movement involved. But any of those would be cardiovascular exercise. And with weight training, where that would come in is to try to build up individual muscles. Although while you're doing weight training, you're not going to burn as many calories per se as cardiovascular exercise. How it helps is that metabolic after effect, is that as you're home sleeping and your body's going, holy smokes, he may do that again, and now has to repair from that trauma, that stress of the weightlifting exercises. That's where it's going to have some additional effects in helping people reach their goals.
We actually need to take just a quick break here, and we'll keep this conversation going when we return. We, of course, want your voice in on the conversation today. If you'd like to share some tips, perhaps you've been able to resist holiday temptations or get the weight off, maybe keep it off during this holiday season, 260-452-1185 or toll-free at 1-800-471-9264. Of course, you can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. Stay with us. The conversation continues when we return.
Tis the season for charitable giving, but how do donors figure out where to give, and how do charities prove that money is actually achieving its aim? I'm Jennifer Ludden, the rise of results-oriented philanthropy, plus how loss can change the holidays. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
New flight attendants are sick a lot because it's kind of like a kindergarten teacher. You're exposed to a lot of germs, mainly because I'm taking garbage from everyone, you know, and saying thank you for it. Thank you. Thank you for your garbage.
Join us for the Moth Radio Hour, True Stories Told Live, from the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
Wednesday nights at 9 here on WBOI.
You help pay for public education in Indiana, but from the Capitol to the classroom, the payback isn't always clear. You can find out how the state's policy impacts your family in our new State Impact Indiana Project, a local national collaboration between Indiana public broadcasting stations and NPR. You can hear the stories during Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and Weekend Edition on NIPR, and dig deeper with a click on the State Impact logo at nipr.fm.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Reinbold and Anderson, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC, local financial advisors who help people just like you. More information on Reinbold and Anderson on NIPR's homepage at nipr.fm.
Twenty-five minutes past the hour, it's Midday Matters, Health 360 on WBOI Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beter, filling in for Sarah D'Elia this week. Of course, with me, Dr. Peter Rothman, one of the usual suspects in the Madge Rothschild Studios here. And joining us this hour, Jennifer Harrison and Todd Jenkins. We're talking about that holiday weight. A lot of folks, as Dr. Rothman pointed out earlier in the program, gain weight during this holiday season through poor eating and a little less exercise than you might do throughout the rest of the year. We want to hear your stories. Have you been able to keep that weight off? Have you been able to avoid holiday temptation? How have you been able to do that? Give us a call. Share your story. And of course, if you have any other questions and comments, we'd love to hear those as well. 260-452-1185. Or you can always call toll-free at 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet.
Todd, I'd like to, again, get back to the question of aerobic versus resistance exercise. And you just mentioned the types of aerobic exercises that would be appropriate, but resistance exercise or weight-bearing exercise, what are the advantages of this? And it seems to me a combination of both aerobic and resistant training is important, but what are the long-term implications of and how can weight resistance training help us as we get older?
Well, especially as we get older, you know, there's some additional concerns. One is that calcium levels in the bone tend to fall, you know, what would lead to like osteopenia, osteoporosis, you know, those bone thinning kind of disorders. So what we'd want to choose as an exercise selection is some sort of weight-bearing exercise. You know, weight training has that effect, but also, again, the cardiovascular can. Two examples would be this. You know, swimming cardiovascularly is excellent exercise, works so many muscle groups, but it's entirely non-weight-bearing. So for those that are trying to pick an exercise that would help with bone density, bone mass, you know, strengthening the bones, that wouldn't be my first choice. I would look for something where they're bearing weight. If they can't bear much weight, maybe a bicycle. Maybe a little bit better yet would be elliptical, you know, because there's no impact with elliptical. But better yet, that I would choose some sort of walking type of exercise as long as they didn't have some other health issue that wouldn't permit that. If a person who happens to be older does some sort of issues, you know, like rheumatoid arthritis, osteoarthritis, or extreme osteoporosis, where the doctor actually feels that maybe that's detrimental, that they're too much of a risk of breaking a bone, then we might actually choose aquatic therapy or aquatic exercise, you know, aerobics in the water, you know, to minimize some of that weight bearing, still permitting them to move, but not exacerbating those conditions, whatever it is they happen to have. So if we can fix it, we try, but if we can't, like with the arthritis, we can work with them, but almost always there's some level of exercise we can still do for a person to keep them moving.
And it looks like we have an email from one of our listeners. And of course, if you'd like to email us your question or comment, please do. It's middaymatters@nipr.fm. Question from Suzanne. Suzanne says, good show. What advice would your panel give for maintaining fitness when recovering from a flu or cold virus, especially this winter with the long lingering bugs that are going around? And we were just talking about this before the program. A lot of folks down for the count during this winter season.
Yeah, and actually I'm even recovering from a bit of a cold, so I sympathize. I would suggest this, as a general rule, if it's a deep barking cough and you're running a fever, they generally recommend rest. Your body needs rest. You know, and more stress on top of that cold can be too much for it to handle. But oftentimes, if you're not too overwhelmed, if it's more upper respiratory, you know, runny nose, you know, a slight tickle in the throat, as long as you're not pushing too hard, you're not overwhelming your immune system, the textbooks would still say it's okay to exercise. We just might modify, you know, the amount of exercise. Mm-hmm.
And of course, diet can suffer as well if you're not at 100% of health.
Absolutely. When it comes to being sick, you know, regardless of the illness, one of the big concerns is dehydration. So we really want to push water. You know, if you are having some kind of stomach bug where you can't keep anything down, something that has electrolytes in it to help get that balance back is crucial.
Dr. Rothman.
So once again, to recap what Todd said, aerobic exercise is great for burning off fat, but when we get into resistance exercises, this is something to think of as we get older. Do you want to be able to lift up your grandchildren? Do you want to be able to put that bag in the overhead rack on the plane? So we want to maintain our strength as we get older. What I'd like to ask Jennifer now is, the Europeans find Americans kind of odd because we snack. And eating between meals in other cultures is kind of a no-no, and the Europeans tend to be somewhat slimmer than Americans, and this is one of the players here. And of course, from Halloween through New Year's, we have an extreme amount of snacking. How much snacking should be done? What are the hourly intervals between meals? What would you recommend, and what are healthy snacks?
Sure. Snacking can be a very hot topic. Some people can handle it, some people can't, basically. So there's not a perfect answer, but overall, you know, eating every 3 to 4 hours, I feel, is good. So that doesn't mean going, you know, go through McDonald's every 3 to 4 hours. You definitely have to make the right choices. you know, if you skip meals, you skip snacks, if you go too long, your body sort of shuts down and then you get this extreme feeling of hunger. And that's what leads us to overeating, to binging, to choosing those high fat, high calorie, you know, foods that feel like they will give us that energy when we're feeling sluggish. So when you do have a snack, ideally, you know, something definitely with protein in it, and maybe pair it with like a fruit or, you know, vegetable. So it's sustaining. It keeps you full. If you choose like the crackers and the sweets, those are just simple sugars that our body burns through very quickly. It's not satisfying. We get hungry quickly, even before the next meal, and that leads us to grabbing another snack. So we have to choose something that will basically stick in us for a little while.
So proteins, vegetables.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, for example, I don't know, cottage cheese with some fruit on it would be a great snack. String cheese, you know, even half a sandwich, something that actually has some, you know, protein, fiber, things that fill us up and keep us full.
Todd Jenkins, you wanted to jump in there.
Yeah, I was just going to add with Jennifer, it can be funny how individualized that can be. Mm-hmm. You know, I was heavier at one time, you know, right out of college, you know, weight got up to about 208. You know, I ended up losing about 45 pounds in total. For me, I just discovered with myself, I couldn't snack. You know, I was either very good with my diet, the way I chose to eat, or I can be very bad, you know, and when I fall off that wagon, I just throw myself under the wheels. And so I find that real hard, you know, just me personally, where other people seem to be able to handle it fine, that they can have just that little bit and they put the rest away and they're fine.
I want to take a moment to invite our listeners to join the conversation today, of course. We want to hear your story and your tips as well. 260-452-1185 or 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, or you can always post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet. Jennifer Harrison, I just about interrupted you there.
Oh,
go ahead, please.
I think Todd made a great point. I have a lot of patients, you know, we talk about, should I snack? Should I not snack? Because some of them tell me, they're like, when I start eating, I can't stop. You know, I start grazing and then it's done. I just graze the rest of the day and I still eat my meals. I eat too much. So that's where it really comes in, you know, that individualized plan. What works best for you? Okay. And that's what I help patients do, obviously. We work on that. We come up with a plan of, okay, if you can't snack, we need to make sure you're eating your meals at the right times, getting in the right foods then and there. So I think it's great to, you know, recognize what you can do. So I'm not, you know, if you know you can't handle having a snack, don't listen to me say snacking is good and go start eating it and then get those excess calories in that you really don't need.
But about 4 or 5 hours, you'd say, is a good interval.
I would definitely not go over 5 if you could. You know, right. Work schedule, sometimes it is difficult to do that. But if you can try to stay under that, that would be ideal.
Looks like we have a question from two of our listeners, actually. Randy and Monica wrote in at middaymatters@nipr.fm. They're wondering, is it true that you can't build muscle after the age of 40? And Todd, that sounds like one for you.
Oh, sure. No, you can still build muscle. It may not happen at the same rate as it was when we were in our 20s, but no, we can still change that. There's some reversibility there. Mm-hmm. From that deconditioned. Again, we're not all going to look like bodybuilders, you know, but we can still improve strength. And there's just a number of ways we do that. You know, we may not gain in the size of the muscle, but that muscle that we have can work much, much better and be able to generate more force. And that's what strength would be. So no, we can change those things.
And along those lines, we've been talking kind of in a general sense about how to improve our behaviors over the holidays. Jennifer Harrison, are the rules for snacking, for eating during the holidays, for all of this markedly different for younger folks, an 18-year-old, let's say, versus a 65-year-old?
Absolutely. The younger you are, the more calories your body burns. We tend to, not everyone, but we tend to be more active as we're younger, of course, and just the rate, you know, that our body metabolizes, we need a lot more calories. So as we get older, as we age, you know, especially women, unfortunately, postmenopausal, we don't burn as many calories. We just do not need as much. Our need for calories goes down often around 1,200 calories a day is the need. And that's, you know, that's not a lot. So if you're choosing the wrong foods, you are not going to be satisfied. So it does. It definitely, you know, makes an impact on the age.
We do need to take a quick break here for the news, but we do want to take just a sec to invite you to join the conversation. The number one more time, 260-452-1185. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. It's @middaymatters. Stay with us. The conversation continues in just a few moments.
Dick Wolf created one of the most successful franchises in television history, Law and Order. Now he's trying a new career, writing thrillers.
You know, you hope for a certain type of reaction to the book, and you hope it's not, gee, you should really stay in television.
A conversation with Dick Wolf later on All Things Considered from NPR News. All Things Considered airs weekday afternoons at 4 on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Good afternoon. I'm Katie Anderson with WBOI News. If the holiday kept you too busy to keep up with the Comets and Mad Ants, WBOI's Doug Gruber brings you up to date.
Friday night, the K's were in Kalamazoo, where they played maybe their best game of the season. Tied 2-2 after two periods, the Comets scored three third-period goals for a 5-3 win over the Wings. Saturday night back at the Coliseum, the Comets hosted the Trenton Titans for their only meeting of the season. Trenton used two power play goals and a shorthanded goal to down the Comets 5-2 for the K's fourth loss in six games. The Mad Ants were on the road Friday night at Maine, where they were tied with the Red Claws at halftime, but Maine outscored the Mad Ants by 13 points in the third quarter, went on to win 109-99. Saturday in Springfield, the Ants erased a 22-point deficit at halftime, took a 100-96 lead with 2:20 left in the game, but they lost 107-101. The loss puts the Mad Ants at 3-10 for the season.
And for WBOY News, that was Doug Gruber. Leaders from one Indiana school corporation say they embrace a proposal from the county sheriff to add more officers to middle and elementary schools. As WFIU's Stan Jastrzebski reports, educational experts say the key to the idea's success may be in how the officers' jobs are defined.
A suggestion in its early phases would see Vigo County Sheriff Greg Ewing hire three officers to be placed in schools. Vigo County School Corporation Director of Student Services Ray Azar says he thinks the additional law enforcement would make students and staff feel safer in the wake of the Connecticut shootings.
By their presence and their visibility, it would send the message that we are serious about school safety and security. I think it would calm some anxieties among the public.
The proposal, while still in its infancy, is in line with a recommendation issued Friday by the National Rifle Association, whose leaders argue more police carrying firearms in schools can bolster student safety. But both Azar and Russ Skiba, an Indiana University professor who teaches psychology in IU's School of Education, say police should not be seen primarily as keepers of the peace.
There have been difficulties is if the police presence is not well defined in terms of the school's mission, but they're somehow kept separate.
Skiba says more successful integration of police officers in other schools across the country has been achieved by allowing interaction between students and officers outside of just a disciplinary context. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Stan Jastrzebski in Bloomington.
And a state lawmaker wants the Indiana Economic Development Corporation to let the public know how many jobs it is actually creating. Senator Mike Delf said he will introduce the legislation because he believes the public is being intentionally misled. A year-long study it conducted showed as many as 40% of more than 100,000 jobs promoted by Governor Mitch Daniels and IEDC officials from 2005 to 2010 never materialized, but the IEDC won't disclose which companies have not met their job commitments. The IEDC says companies receive tax incentives only after they prove they have achieved their job projections. The bill Delf is introducing would require each company to include updated job and investment information that would be available to the public. And now back to Midday Matters with your host, Sean Beter.
20 minutes before the top of the hour, 1 o'clock, it's Midday Matters Health 360 here on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter along with Dr. Peter Rothman, and this hour we're talking about that holiday weight. Maybe you felt a little fuller than usual after Christmas dinner, and of course this is a season for eating and celebrating. We're talking about how to keep that weight off, how to avoid those holiday temptations, and we want to hear from you this hour. Give us a call, share your tips, or if you have a question or comment for Jennifer Harrison or Todd Jenkins this hour, give us a call, 260-452-1185. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. Dr. Rothman.
Well, as Jennifer just said, young children, of course, are very active. They're growing. They burn up calories. We're not talking about restricting their calories per se. And older individuals have more difficulty losing weight. But we have another group, and those are the college kids. And studies have shown, a very good study at the University of Oklahoma showed that this group also made a significant weight gain between Thanksgiving and Christmas. It has been pointed out, however, that this is also a period of final exams and papers being due. These kids are eating irregularly, if at all, or eating junk food, snack food, fast food. And so they have other excuses between family dinners at Thanksgiving and Christmas for that weight gain. But what is it, Todd, about that age? We hear about the freshman 15, the 18-year-olds going off to school and gaining weight. What is the physiology of this?
Well, people often forget that they feel the same. They still feel young and active, but they also have to remember that they've just reached past that point of growth. I mean, when you're in your infant, toddler, adolescent stage, you're growing so rapidly that alone requires a lot of calories just to get taller, bigger, stronger. But you get into your 20s and you don't need as many calories. You're past that point of growth. Your body is just maintaining at that point, and it just requires less calories. And if you don't remember that, if you're still eating like you're in your teens, that extra at that point will be put on as body fat.
And it looks like we have a caller on the line here. And of course, if you want to join the conversation, please do give us a call, 260-452-1185, or toll free at 1-800-471-9264. Let's get Gene on the line. Gene, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Good afternoon. Thank you. Years ago, well, my weight generally is best at about 165. I'm 5'10". And years ago, gosh, I started putting on weight and got up to 197 pounds, I think. And I decided to go on a diet, and I just checked everything to make sure it didn't have sugar or fructose or sucrose or any kind of sweetener. And I stayed with it for about 6 months and went down to 162 pounds. And then I started eating ordinarily again with a little sweets now and then. And I went right on down to 155. But then it came back. So for some people, something like that might work.
Gene, we appreciate the tips and good luck in continued good health.
Thank you.
And let's ask Jennifer, there is a difference between the refined sugars that we get into candies and sweets and baked goods and the sugars contained, the natural sugars contained in fruits. Can you elaborate on this, please?
Absolutely. When you think about it, when we have fruit is sweet, it has sugar. It's natural sugar. So that kind of sugar is okay. When you get into the processed foods, your sweets, your snacks, if you look on the back, look under the ingredient list, sugar a lot of times is at the top of that list, which means there is a lot in it compared to the rest of the ingredients after it. It's added sugar. It's not natural. It's not sugar that our body can process as easily. And a lot of times that sugar, unfortunately, does not get used for energy, and it ends up being stored as fat because our body can't process it.
To Gene's point, though, he mentioned that some of the weight did, in fact, come back. It seems like that illustrates the point that, not everybody's body, we do have these certain commandments of eating healthfully and exercising, but not everybody's body responds the same way to certain diets or certain exercises.
Absolutely, they don't. And honestly, what it comes down to is calories in versus calories out. The way that you you know, whatever diet you choose to get there, most of them come down to restricting your calories. That's what it comes down to. The more difficult thing that we have to worry about is getting the right balance of foods so that we're not just focusing on eating one food group or completely eliminating another food group, because when we start doing that, that's when we start missing out on, you know, really important vitamins and minerals that our body needs to function. So really, you know, the best overall diet that we can have is a good balanced diet and then just focus on the calories.
And what about the role of fiber, eating fruits, vegetables? Not only do we get the more complex sugars, fruit sugars, but we do get more fiber. And what does fiber do for us?
Fiber, you know, obviously keeps us regular. We all know that. And, you know, it keeps us full. It keeps us satisfied. It takes a lot longer for the fiber to work through us. So, and, you know, it essentially sits in our stomach for longer, making us feel more satisfied as opposed to those refined carbohydrates that we burn through very quickly. So getting in those fruits and vegetables that do have the high fiber is very important. I feel especially at this time of year, because we are eating a lot more of the sweets and the low fiber foods, basically. So we really need to make an effort to incorporate more of those into our diet every day to help make up for that.
And it looks like we have a caller on the line. And of course, we want you to join us 260-452-1185 or toll free at 1-800-471-9264. Let's open the phones and go to Jill. Jill, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hi, good afternoon. I don't know who is my question directed to, but my husband is 76 years old. He had a stroke in 06. And had been exercising regularly with the Fort Wayne Dance Collective, and they were supportive in building strength. Through the summer months, he was not able to get out and do his walks, therefore slipped, and physically muscles weakened. And he had fallen or was unable to get up at the Dance Collective. And it took all the ladies to get up, and of course, as a man, was very embarrassed. And then he fell over in Lakeside Park, and thank God the gardeners were so lovely and helpful, got him home and up, and now he has a fear of going out, period. And all his exercise is walking up and down our 42-foot handicap ramp. What do they suggest? And he doesn't want to eat.
Oh, no. Jill, I'm sorry that's a difficult situation. Todd Jenkins, let's go to you first.
Jill, as far as the exercise, you know, one suggestion would be this. You know, if it's not a hardship, whether it's in transportation or financial, you know, if he could get involved in some sort of aquatic, you know, water, aerobic class. I know a lot of these classes are primarily attended by women, but if he can get past that, if he doesn't feel self-conscious there, some advantages would be this. As one, is while you're in the water, you're not full weight-bearing. It's going to help to hold you up. Mm-hmm. The motion of the water is that water circulates in the pool as people move, and it creates a current almost. It will challenge his balance to force that to adapt and become stronger. Is he pretty profoundly affected? I mean, does he have much paralysis on one side?
No, it was minor. It was okay. Not. But the problem is he's got a catheter.
Okay,
so
all right.
The water won't work.
That makes it harder. Sure, sure. Boy, here would be some thoughts. Again, financially, if it's not a hardship, you know, one possibility would be is if a personal trainer, somebody trained to do exercise, could come to your home, might be able to show you some home exercises, ways to challenge that balance so that it'll improve. What I like is with balance, where it takes more time for cardiovascular endurance to improve, strength to improve, flexibility to improve, balance can improve even in one exercise session. The nervous system adapts fairly quickly. Again, his may be a little more slow than somebody else's, but still can change. You know, certainly, you know, another possibility would be some chair exercises. They even make this little device. You can sit in front of a chair and bicycle on that thing. I know some places that sell devices like that. They're not very much at all. But I know it sounds like he would like to get back to that dancing and that weight-bearing things. So doing doing some weight-bearing exercises, some balanced, challenging exercises could be beneficial there, but under a controlled environment where he wouldn't be as at risk of falling. He would have some safety measures there, some chairs to hang on to, the countertop, kitchen countertop, would be some thoughts. I know it's hard this time of year. It's dangerous for all of us to be out, but especially then for him, because of that risk of falling. We don't want him to hurt something else while he was trying to help himself be more healthy.
Right. And we need to go to a break in just a moment here. But Jennifer Harrison, this can be a challenging time. Any advice on some diet tips, basically?
Well, it sounds to me like he's not eating is what I heard. Mm-hmm. And that, that's really difficult. So when it comes to someone that just will not eat and does not want to eat, basically it's, what sounds good to him, let him pick, let him decide. Don't restrict him. Give him options. We just basically want to be sure we're getting calories in. And obviously we do want to try to get that protein in if he is trying to get that muscle mass back, which he's lost. We need to get protein in. So definitely focus on any kind of protein items he like, whether it be chicken, fish, anything like that. Anything that sounds good to him, definitely be willing to provide that for him.
All right. Now, how do you feel about the Ensures or the Boost or those kind of drinks?
Yeah, I can touch on that quickly. Those are to be used as a supplement only. I would really try to stay away from him doing those all of the time. But if he really is eating nothing and barely anything, I think having one or two of those a day to get in some protein, get in some calories is not a bad idea.
All right. I had just started that a week ago.
Sure.
And I said two only.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's good. All right, thank you.
Jill, very good luck, and thanks for joining us today.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate the help.
All right, bye-bye. 260-452-1185. If you have a question or comment for our panelists today, you can also email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet @middaymatters. We'll be back in 60 seconds. Stay with us.
Liftoff from the planet Earth.
It really was an experiment.
Are we coming in? Oh, baby.
On the new frontier of science and space.
35,000 miles an hour.
328,000 feet.
Leaving our solar system.
We are a speck on a speck on a speck on a speck.
Space. Then and now. This week on Radiolab.
Wednesday nights at 10. Here on WBOI.
I'm Claudia Johnson, host of WBOI Presents. Tonight at 7, we feature two distinctive and very different writers presenting readings of their work this fall at the University of St. Francis. I hope you'll join us for this unique hour of literature on WBOI Presents, tonight at 7.
Six minutes before the top of the hour, you're tuned to Midday Matters on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter, along with Dr. Peter Rothman and Jennifer Harrison and Todd Jenkins. We're talking about fighting that holiday weight. A lot of Americans overindulge during the holidays. So how do you resist that temptation, and how do you get the weight off once you've already acquired it? And Todd Jenkins, we had a caller just a moment ago. You had one more thought to add as well.
Yeah, Jill, I hope you're still there. One other thing I would tend to add for you is it might be very helpful for your husband to get into some physical therapy, even if it's for a short period of time, to let them help, educate and strengthen, working on that balance in a very safe environment, so then he can be more independent and get back into those physical activities he would love to do.
All right, Dr. Rothman.
Yeah, I think we've touched on some of the major ways to prevent the holiday weight gain syndrome afflicting us next year. And I think planning ahead, don't go to parties on an empty stomach, Eat normally, eat your healthy snacks, exercise earlier in the day. Portion control, Jennifer mentioned, cutting back on refined sugars and sweets, and of course, appropriate exercise. What about alcohol? Alcohol is a major player at this time
Absolutely.
Of year, and what does it do or not do for our bodies nutrition-wise?
Nutrition-wise, alcohol does nothing for us. We enjoy it. We have it. We go to parties. We, you know, have a drink or two or a few more. You know, we really enjoy ourselves, but while we're having that, we're not thinking about, you know, the problems that it can be causing for us. So first and foremost, alcohol is just empty calories. It's very high calorie, you know, an ounce, you know, 150 calories, maybe more. So it, depending on what kind you have, and that's not even including the, you know, adding in your mixers, be it high calorie, high sugar juice, sodas, margaritas, there's nothing for us except for empty calories that really bump up the calorie intake that we have, a lot of excess calories. And at the same time, you know, when you have alcohol, your inhibitions sort of go out the window. And as a result of that, you're at a party, there's a lot of food. We tend to eat a lot more than we normally would than if we weren't drinking. So alcohol can definitely be a big problem this time of year and continuing on. Super Bowl's coming up, football, you know, it's a constant thing that we do need to struggle with. So basically make a game plan, plan ahead, say I'm going to have two drinks, I will stop after that, have a glass of water in between each drinks to help avoid that dehydration that alcohol often brings. But just basically plan ahead for it.
And Todd, you know, in terms of you know, alcohol's effect on physiology on the body, it's not exactly helpful when you're getting ready to say run the next morning. It's not going to help you, you know, run that marathon the next day.
No, especially because it tends to act as a diuretic. You know, you're going to become dehydrated with that alcohol content. So you're right. You know, I actually heard one person say he was carbo loading before a marathon, and he was doing it by drinking beers the night before, and it just doesn't work that way. You know, metabolically, it really taxes the body. You know, the liver works desperately to try to clear that out of the system because it can't do anything useful with it. When you hear of the positive effects of like things like wine or beer, it's not the alcohol that has anything positive. It's those other chemicals, you know, that are in there. But often we can gain those benefits through some other means.
We have just a few minutes left in the program here, and I want to ask you both just very briefly, Todd Jenkins, we'll start with you. For folks who, you know, have heard this program, they're ready to get healthier, ready to do better in the next year. What do you tell them to overcome that inertia? Because inertia is an awfully powerful thing.
Goals can be extremely helpful. You know, I really have enjoyed the fact that Fort Wayne's taken on this Fort for Fitness, you know, not to just push one event, but it's been a reason, an excuse for people to get moving again. You know, that they know that thing's coming up this spring, so if they want to train for it, they'd better start today. You know, that they want to do that 5K, 10K, you know, half marathon, whatever it happens to be. You know, if that's what it takes to get you going, you know, that's great. You know, the other thing is finding some sort of workout partner, somebody that's going to hold you accountable, that you don't want to let them down because you chose not to go to the gym or you're choosing not to go for that walk. You know, somebody to hold you accountable can be a huge help. Even when you don't feel like moving, you know they're going to do it, so you better get out there and meet up.
And 30 seconds here, Jennifer Harrison, if folks want to get started, what's the best way to get started? Do they have to have a big ceremony and get ready and let's get going?
Absolutely not. I completely agree with Todd. I think making a goal is the number one thing you have to do. And it's not just make a goal. Don't say, I want to lose weight. You have to be specific with that goal, and you need to make a goal that you can actually achieve. Nothing. Don't say, I want to lose 50 pounds in a month. You know, make it something you can actually achieve so that you don't set yourself up for failure when you can't meet that unreachable goal.
And of course, always a good idea to consult your healthcare
Absolutely.
Professional as well. Dr. Rothman, we are out of time here. I know we have many more questions, but we have to let it go for now. I want to thank Jennifer Harrison and Todd Jenkins for being with us. Thank you very much. It was a wonderful program.
Thank you.
Dr. Thanks. Peter Rothman, thank you as well for being with us. It's a pleasure co-hosting with you this hour.
My pleasure, and the goal is to not gain that 1 pound each year, which adds up over 30, 40, 50 adult years.
Wiser words never Absolutely. Spoken. Thanks very much. I'm Sean Beter. This is WBOI Fort Wayne. Fresh Air is coming up next. It's 1 o'clock.
Thank you.